history professor at Chico State, will give a talk about his contributions to an extensive amicus brief that was presented to the New York Court of Appeals in support of legal personhood for two chimpanzees, Kiko and Tommy, in a case brought by the Non-Human Rights Project. The talk will be held on Monday, April 29th from 4 to 5 p.m. at the Chico Women's Club, located at 592 East 3rd Street in Chico. You may recognize Dr. Jones is also a programmer here on PCFR, hosting the Peace and Social Justice Show on occasional Fridays and a music show, String Theory, on alternate Mondays. All right, that's it for the calendar. If you have an event to share, send me an email at chicovegan@gmail.com. And Danny, we have one last brief bit of business to close out today's show, the Animal Rights Quote of the Week.
Today's Animal Rights Quote of the Week is from the film Dominion. The truth is, there's no humane way to kill someone who wants to live.
And that is all we ask you to consider. This has been Non-Human Radio, a production of TCFR 90.1 FM in Chico. The views and opinions expressed on this broadcast are those of the hosts and do not reflect the opinions of KZFR, its board, its volunteers, its underwriters, or its staff.
We do, however, reflect the opinions of our non-human fellow earthlings who'd rather not be killed than eaten, farmed, hunted, raced, experimented upon, and otherwise abused, or shot by crazy ranchers.
Our theme music is Ready to Fall by Vegan Activist Rockers Rise Against. Please stay tuned for KZFR's weekly public affairs program, The Real Issue, coming up next from 6 to 7 p.m.
This is Danny Thompson, Junior Trezino, signing off. Remember, be different, be better, be kind.
And go vegan. Issue starts right now. You're listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. This is Sue Hildebrandt. The Real Issue is a public affairs talk show. We are here every Wednesday night from 6 until 7 p.m., and we can also be heard live through the internet at kzfr.org. You can also listen to the archives from our website. This edition of The Real Issue is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Tender Loving Cafe, featuring artisan pizza, salads, fresh roasted Tender Loving coffee, craft beers, wine, and more. Tender Loving Cafe is located at 365 East 6th Street, around the corner from the Pageant Theater, and they have a vegan brunch on Sunday mornings with live music and a rotating art gallery. You can find out more information about Tender Loving Cafe on Facebook. Find out the details. And I have definitely been there for Sunday brunch, and they do a fabulous main Sunday brunch. So here at The Real Issue, we planned to discuss the findings from a point in time count with Jennifer Griggs, who is with the Butte County Countywide Homeless Continuum of Care, and she was supposed to be here tonight, but that report is not going to be released as originally scheduled. So Jennifer Griggs will be on this program just as soon as that report is made public. So instead, tonight on The Real Issue, we will talk with one of the organizers and the speaker of several of the events scheduled in Chico on April 29th and April 30th. There are four events scheduled over those 2 days to talk about not only the real implications of climate change in the age of extinction, but also how communities and how individuals can prepare for this transition. We'll then get an update about a story we discussed 2 weeks ago here on The Real Issue, and that is the creation of the Commercial Cannabis Citizens Advisory Committee. So last night at the Chico City Council meeting, Jessica McKenzie with the Inland Cannabis Farmers Association was appointed to the committee to serve as the cannabis expert. Jessica McKenzie will be in the studio to talk about the purpose of that committee and what exactly it means to be a cannabis expert. So to begin, on April 2nd, as the rain muffled the voices of the speakers at the dais and the streets of downtown Chico were flooding, the Chico City Council passed a resolution in a 5-1 vote to declare a climate emergency. Council member Casey Reynolds didn't vote because she had to leave the meeting early because of the flooding, and Council member Sean Morgan voted no. So one person at that meeting that night has been an activist and a facilitator for environmental and social justice issues over the last 30 years. Peter Melton's major work recently has been around the issue of climate change. He is also the lead organizer for the West Coast tour of Dr. Guy McPherson, which includes four events here in Chico on April 29th and April 30th. Dr. Guy McPherson is an internationally recognized speaker. He's an award-winning scientist and the world's leading authority on abrupt climate change, leading to near-term human extinction. Dr. McPherson is a professor emeritus at the University of Arizona, and his published works include more than a dozen books and hundreds of scholarly articles. He's a blogger, a cultural critic, and co-host of his own radio program, Nature Bats Last. Dr. McPherson speaks to general audiences around the globe and to scientists, students, educators, and not-for-profit and business leaders to seek their best available options when confronting Earth's cataclysmic changes. And he is on the phone with us, and Peter Milton is on the phone with us to talk to us tonight. I'm happy to welcome both of you to The Real Issue.
Thank you very much, Sue. It's an honor. Yeah, always great to be here with my Chico family.
Peter Milton, so for people that don't know, Peter, you are here. You've been here a lot. You've had this has been a home base for you for many years, and you still sort of migrate between here and a few other places, don't you?
Yeah, and before I get into any of that, I probably sent you some wrong data. We're in Chico on the Saturday, or Sunday the 28th. At the Pageant Theater at 7 o'clock, and then Monday the 29th.
Okay.
We're doing the three other events.
But still Sunday and Monday, the 28th and Monday, the 29th. I will not make that mistake again. So,
All right. Yes. To answer your question, yes. My brother came up to college in Chico in 1983 and was from the first moment I came to visit Chico for Halloween 1983. I fell in love. Me and my younger brother came up to college here. I graduated from college here. So did my younger brother. He stayed and has been in Chico for the past 30 years. And so it's always been a home. And then I moved here to Chico in 2008 and began to live to Chico for 5 years and have been back and forth a zillion times in the last 30 years.
So the two of you now are on, I've watched a lot of the videos on your website, Dr. McPherson, and so the two of you are on this West Coast tour, and you, Dr. McPherson, for many, many, many years, you've been speaking about the data, about the evidence around the real threats of climate change, but this tour is a little bit different for the two of you, and it's more or less focusing on the emotional effects of the information. And so I want to kind of talk about that a little bit. So for either one of you, Peter, I don't know, since you've been organizing a lot of this and you're sort of the emotional part of this tour, talk about the purpose of this particular tour. What is the purpose? What is it that, you know, when people say, I might be interested, what are you focusing on these days?
Yeah, thanks, Sue. So I first brought Dr. McPherson to Chico in fall of 2014. They had a magic on campus with 150 people as early adopters to say there may be a big problem going on here. And now 5 years later, we're clear that there's a big problem going on here, and the science has been so obvious and run over for so long now that we've come to realize there's 100 videos you can watch of Dr. McPherson doing the science part of this. But there aren't very many videos of humans getting together and sitting in a circle and daring to feel into what's going on and daring to admit that they're scared and confused and daring to just be with each other. And so that's what we wanted to create, a kind of a combination. There's definitely an educational element to our meetings where you'll get a full dose of what the latest and greatest news is. And every day there's more about how our delicate web of life is spreading. And Dr. McPherson is the absolute best at daring to tell it straight up. So you'll get a dose of information, and then we'll sit together and dare to feel through what is, who do I become amidst feeling this.
Peter Melton, it's interesting that you approach it that way, that people don't want us feel it. And I wonder, if you see this in these workshops, in these gatherings, in these conversations, you know, this tour, it just so often feels like happily, it seems that even the mainstream is talking about climate change. And we all are aware of it. You know, I'm with college students all day long, every single day, and they're aware of it and they're concerned about it. But I think it's so overwhelming, and I think people feel helpless. And I'm wondering if that's part of the purpose of these gatherings, but also are you seeing that kind of emotion, almost a debilitating sense of helplessness that needs to be addressed before we can actually take action?
Yeah, that's it right on the head. So, well, for example, you know, we've been doing this for 5 years with Dr. McPherson, and of course the story of change at the beginning was like, hey guys, listen to this guy. He's got crazy insights on what's going on. And over the years, that's been, they're coming true. And, more and more scientists are saying that this is going to be a problem sooner. And now, it's here. But we're living in the sixth great extinction, and nowhere do they feel it more. Not nowhere, but of course, obviously, with the Paradise Fire, Chico and surrounding areas are feeling this in a very deep way. Last night, we had our first talk on this leg of the tour in Hayward. And there were 20 people who were ready to talk and ready to feel and ready to be together in a moment. And then we realized that one of the main goals of our meetings is to hope that a support group can start. And I started one like about 4 years ago now in Chico called Daring to Discuss. And we've had ups and downs through that, but in the last 5 months now we've been doing a monthly meeting in Chico. For people who are what we call collapse aware or climate crisis aware, and daring to feel and talk about it.
Brad McPherson into the conversation, but I also have Peter Milton on the phone there on their West Coast tour talking about climate change, but not just the numbers and not just the science, but also the emotional approach that that I think maybe as a nation, as a world community, we're moving in the direction of, I think this is what's needed. But Peter Ratner, as I listen to you, I'm thinking, oh, I'm not sure I can handle this. I got so much to do this week. I'm so busy. And we go into this denial of it's not that bad. And so I want to ask Dr. McPherson to jump in here for the moment and give us a big whack of science to really ground us in the reality of climate change. Where are we today?
We are in a very touch-and-go situation, basically, day to day. For example, here's a line from a publication put out by the European Strategy and Policy Analysis System earlier this week. The report is called Global Trends to 2030 Challenges and Choices for Europe. And here's the important line here, an increase of 1.5 degrees. I'm going to interrupt myself right there. The report is talking about 1.5 degrees above the 1750 baseline when the global average temperature was about 13.5 degrees Celsius. So an increase of 1.5 degrees is the maximum the planet can tolerate. Should temperatures increase further, we will face even more droughts, plus extreme heat and poverty, and at worst, the extinction of humankind altogether. Okay, so that's at 1.5 degrees. Earth was 1.75 degrees above the 1750 baseline more than 2 years ago. Clearly, the planet had warmed up since then. We're probably around 1.85 degrees to be above the 1750 baseline, and we certainly aren't facing extinction on any number of routes. And this could transpire very, very quickly, or it could be a death by a thousand cuts and grind forward so that we don't lose habitat for human beings for another couple or 3 years. We don't know, but there are many different ways that we could step ourselves into the loss of habitat for human animals on Earth. So, it's a dire situation. These are the good old days, and we are rapidly warming the Earth, and that rapid warming is certain to lead to loss of habitat for humans in the very near term.
Dr. McPherson, since you're, I've been wondering about this. I'm going to ask an honest question from me, and I have a feeling that a lot of folks are wondering about this as well. This is where I struggle is. We're at this moment, and scientists are telling us it's too late. The damage is done, and I almost feel like we need to really be preparing for how to deal with it, because the opportunity to slow it down or even reverse it is long gone and long out of our control. Would you say that that's true?
That's absolutely true, and that's why my latest peer-reviewed journal article was written in the journal Clinical Psychology Forum. So that's a peer-reviewed journal, and that paper, which is dated May of this year, actually came out about 6 weeks early, which is commonplace, and the title is Becoming Hope Free. And the paper, the general idea behind the paper is compare what medical doctors did with the full support of the medical ethicist community in the 1960s and through the early 1970s when they would lie to their patients to give them hope. They would sometimes tell the family, but they would frequently not tell the patient.
Scientist, but I didn't know if you'd be insulted by that. But you know what I mean. You're a hard scientist. You know, I'm a soft scientist. I love the squishy stuff. But it's interesting that your latest peer review article is in a psychology journal, and so it's an interesting shift on this program on the real issue. I have had two folks that I just adore. One is Rebecca Shinaloo, and the other one is Malama McNeil, and their work is facing death head on. And through many conversations I've had with them is that when we recognize our own immortality, our own mortality, then we actually live day by day more fully and more open-heartedly. And I'm wondering, I'm starting to get a better sense of this tour that you're on. And Peter, let's drag you back into this conversation between the two of you. It seems like that's the approach that you all are taking. Am I on the right track here?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll let Peter follow up on that. But, you know, the name of my next book, which I'm writing with my partner, Colleen Schneider, is Sanitary Hospice, a guidebook. So that's clearly the direction that I'm trying to head. And if it means expanding beyond, like, the hard science or natural science background and expertise, I have no problem with that whatsoever. And Peter is the combination of me and Peter, I think, makes for a good partnership with respect to getting that information out there. Peter, can you comment a little bit more on that?
Well, yes. Well, thank you for acknowledging that. It's been a beautiful journey to dance around this incredible existential scientific story with you, really, what will likely end up being the final chapters of humanity that are unfolding now while we're still in this old bubble. Even though all the terrible things that have happened, we're still, many of us in the privileged West, if you will, living what seem like normal lives. And so amidst that, a lot of people don't want to deal with, well, what do you mean there's an asteroid coming our way? What do you mean the habitat is struggling? And of course, there's a litany of things to help people open up if they're ready. But really, it narrows down to everybody being on their own individual right of passage. This is what has shifted. It's no longer a scientist or somebody is going to tell you what's going on and what you should do. We've tried that. And the scientists for 20-plus years now have said it's really bad, and we better get going right away. Well, 30 years ago, they said we only have 15 years. And then 10 years ago, they said we have 17 years. And you know, this year they said we have 12 years, you know, which was, so it's just a struggling baseline and struggling hope, really, to say, guys, if we all just did it now, we could go, we can make it. And so that has worn out its welcome. And it's now time to say, we've got to look at this, if you choose to. And for a lot of people, they don't want to, and I get it. I wonder, I kind of wish that I didn't. It's been there, you know, it's like how did I stumble into this? Somebody sent me a link, and I'm a peace activist, I'm a positive middle child Libra, I don't want to tell people the world's ending. And that's like the last thing I want to do, and here I find myself in.
Right.
And so you hit it right on the edge. We're daring people who are ready and want to come to each other and stand scared, and then just go from there.
And if you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. Peter Milton, you in your response right there, you made a reference to a rite of passage, and I want to ask you to talk about what exactly you mean by that term in this under these circumstances, and how does that relate to the kinds of workshops the two of you are offering on the 28th and the 29th?
Yeah, so the rite of passage is really just being landed in January. challenge that we need to look at. But I was never able to do that. And just last week, I told my mom. 5.5 years after being involved in this, I finally got to tell my mom what I thought was going on. And so it was powerful to be able to be in that place because I created this loving way to write the passage to do it that says, there's a bunch of info out there. You get to decide what you want to believe. There's a bunch of opinions. There's scientific facts. There's religion. There's politics. A whole bunch of info. You got to decide who you are with the info. And then there's a whole bunch of possible consequences. You got to decide what you think is real about possible consequences. Are we talking about bumps in the road? Or are we talking about falling off the cliff? Right? You've got to decide for yourself what's real. And then you get to feel into the urgency. Are we talking the next couple years? Are we talking 20 years? Or can we have to find 100 to figure this out? And you could find somebody who says all of those different things, and you could pick that person to believe, and you've made up your story about where we sit with climate change. That's the first three steps of the rite of passage. Then what we've done, as strong humans, we step right into our masculine and said, well, if there's a problem, let's fix it. And we've been very fix-oriented. And the activism group, very fix-oriented, because that's all we've ever known. Let's get some politicians in there. Let's pass some bills. Let's change this. Let's get electric cars and light bulbs and God knows what to try to fix this. But what we, in doing that, I think we missed the key part, and this is what it really landed for me. It's like, wait a minute. We have to pause before we go into fixing. We have to be with this. We have to sit with this. We have to pull in the feminine energy of just being with what we've co-created on this planet. Right? We were born into this set of living arrangement. We were born on the party train, as I call it. And we couldn't just get on. It's been amazing. We've done amazing things. Humanity has done incredible things. But at the same time, we've used up all the resources and overpopulated and overconsumed the planet and hypnotized ourselves into our luxuries and comforts to where we don't even know if we could change if we wanted to. We're so deep in this story of consumerism, capitalism, growth, all that. So we slow down and we go into the grief. We dare to look at what's going on because each of us are putting on a dozen blinders every day just to pretend to go out there and live our lives. If we really felt into what's happening in the oceans, to our friends in the water, what's happening to the rivers, what's happening to the ice, what's happening to the coral reefs, let alone the people that are struggling, let alone the people who are lost their homes and everything, we'd be laying down crying the whole day if we didn't have blinders to put on. So we kind of dare. We don't have to. If you choose, it's part of your rite of passage. You feel into that. And then when you feel into that, you come out with a whole different energy. As we notice from the people who've lost everything in the Paradise Fire, I'm sure you know some. And they've come out with a beginning. Some of the early adapters are beginning to come out with this energy that says, oh my God, I've lost everything, but I'm still here. And I've lost everything, but we're still here. We have to decide who we are amidst losing everything and amidst this climate reality. And they come out, and more will, with this passion, this fire, this presence that you hear in my voice that says, man, if this is the end, if you're telling me we have 5 years to live, let's call it, watch me go. Right? But that's compared to a terminal illness that you just don't know, like a lot of cancer patients. Well, you got 1 to 5 years, right? And then some cancer patients live longer and some don't, but it's that kind of passion that can come out that I think can inspire activism in people. Because once you felt it, once you decided what you think is real, and then you grieved about it, and then you decided who you're going to be, and you come out and say, amidst what I feel and believe about this, I choose to blank. I choose to save the whales. I'm going to get into politics. I'm going to work with hemp. I'm going to, whatever it is. Right? And then you're on fire about that because you know that time is short and you've got nothing to lose. That's the rite of passage.
It's, you know, it's fascinating. And, you know, I know that there are not, you know, there aren't that many people that are climate deniers. I think they're vocal ones. But generally, I mean, I think the science is generally believed. The interesting thing, however, Peter Milne, as you're talking, is somebody may respond and say, why am I going to go into the sadness if it's not true or if it's not that urgent? But as I listen to you, I'm reminded of an article I read recently. And it's called, it's by Jennifer Hochschild, and it's called Happiness and the American Dream. No, it's called What is the American Dream? And it's by, I can't remember who it is. Anyway, it's not Hochschild. Anyway, so he goes through this idea that there are now these happiness studies. And what research shows is that up to about $12,000, as the per capita income hits $12,000, the respondents will mark greater happiness. And then above $12,000, when your needs have been met and you make more and more and more money, we actually see an indirect correlation. With more money as a nation, people report being more unhappy. And so I almost feel like if we're ignoring this moment, even if it's not true, which I believe that it is true, but even if it's not true, it feels like this moment is an opportunity to do some real life evaluation, because if a lot of us are working too much at jobs that are not very satisfying to buy more stuff that we really don't care about, it seems like this is a moment to really reevaluate, are we happy and what is it we need to do to be happier?
Yes, Dr. McPherson, would you like to comment?
Yeah, I think it's clear at this point, for most of us anyway, that what we need to be happier, what we need to be more filled with joy, is relationships, not accomplishments, not material possessions, but relationships, meaningful relationships, so that when we get up in the morning, when we go to bed at night, we know there are people who care about us, and we know that there are people we care about. Those are what drive each of us. When somebody is in hospice, they are not wishing they had bought another necklace or another 7 pairs of shoes. They are concerned about relationships, and they become suddenly honest with their relationships if they're honest with themselves about their own hospice. So, I see a lot of in the people who almost get there with respect to abrupt climate change. I see a lot of we understand climate change, and we understand that we're responsible, at least in part, but I'm not going to change any part of my life. We don't have any idea how long this settlement arrangement is going to hold up. I might live to be 80 or 100, just like my parents, just like my grandparents. And so there's a certain element in each of us who wants to remain on the same treadmill we've always known and not live with urgency, because living with urgency is hard. It's exhausting. And it requires a certain level of commitment to acknowledge that, as Homer wrote some 2,800 years ago in the Iliad, any moment may be your last.
So if you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. So it really is. The two of you are bringing up in a very timely moment for me personally, but I think, generally where we are globally is it's a real decisional moment where how do we want to move forward. And so the two of you will be up in Chico on Sunday, April 28th, and Monday, April 29th. And there's 4 events. You two are going to be pretty busy while you're in town. So let's talk about those in the last few minutes that I have you. On April 28th at 7 p.m. at the Pageant Theater, there's going to be a climate crisis presentation with a Q&A. What is that going to be? What's going to happen there at the Pageant Theater?
Yes, it's years ago we did this at the Pageant, thank you, Miles, and the Pageant Theater for having us. And it was almost a full house of people there to hear guys, roughly half an hour PowerPoint presentation of all the data. there to sign books and talk to other people and go deeper from his perspective as folks who want to stick around after the support group or just come to hear more of Dr. McPherson. And then Mimi Riley out at Duke College said, well, we got to get more students hearing about all this. And Steve Marquette, of course, who's running the Sunrise Movement, is on board with this, and several of the other groups from the college, from both of the colleges, who were present at that retail store and council meeting where they voted that statewide in an emergency, climate emergency. So we're going to have a youth-oriented, although everyone's welcome, a youth-oriented at the Youth College Chico Center Monday night at 6:30, where some of the young people who are getting very active and understanding what's going on will be speaking along with Dr. Pearson and myself, and Mimi Riley, who heads up the Sustainability Department at Duke College.
And so where can people find out more? Eventbrite is to get a ticket for the pageant on Sunday the 28th, and where can people find out about all the other events, all the details?
DrMcPherson.com, coming events tab, has some of those details, and we'll update it for tonight for even more thorough details.
Great. And I know that the two of you are going to be on KZFR a few more times over the next week or so people can check in with you on the radio and then hopefully show up at an event.
Yeah, it'd be great. We're in Monterey tonight and in Santa Cruz on Saturday, San Rafael on Earth Day Monday, and Berkeley, then Colfax, and back to Berkeley, then up to Chico, then on to Ashland, and then on to Portland as we dare to feel into this with our brothers and sisters.
All right, Dr. Guy McPherson and Peter Milton, thanks so much for being here. Thanks for the work that you do. And it sounds like fun being on the road, but I know it's exhausting. So we'll see you in another week or so.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the chance to chat with you today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. All right. See you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. We're going to take a really quick break. When we are back, I see Jessica McKenzie out there, and I'm going to bring her back in. And we are going to talk about the newly created and appointed Commercial Cannabis Citizens Advisory Committee. You are listening to KZFR. You're listening to The Real Issue. We will be right back. Commercial Cannabis Citizen Advisory Committee. And at last night's meeting, the membership of that committee was confirmed. So Jessica McKenzie, the Executive Director of the Inland Cannabis Farmers Association, who has been a frequent guest on The Real Issue, was confirmed as the cannabis expert. So to talk about the purpose of that committee again and the time frame for the committee, and most importantly for me personally, what exactly does it mean to be a cannabis expert? So I have Jessica McKenzie here in the studio with me. Thanks for coming in tonight, Jessica. I always appreciate having you here.
Happy to be here. Great question. When I get the answer, I'll let you know. I've kind of chafed against that label ever since they put it out, because the truth is, given the nature of laws and regulations and licensing in the state of California about cannabis, I don't think there is any such thing as a cannabis expert, at least not across the board. So I'm hoping that I do it justice as a representative of the cannabis industry, who has broad knowledge and knows where to go to get the answers that I don't have.
Mm-hmm.
An expert, you know, I kind of shy away from that word.
I did. Well, when you know, I did some reading, and I thought, what exactly does that mean? Does that mean you know the laws? Does it mean you know the different medical uses? Does it mean, do you know, the best way to ingest it? You know what I mean? Like, what does it mean? So let me just start by saying, Jessica McKenzie, congratulations. It's very exciting. It's very exciting. I think it's going to be, my guess, it's going to be interesting to watch you. And the reason I say that is because you really and truly are so very diplomatic, and I think that's going to be a required quality in this moment. And I'm wondering if you could talk about the purpose of this committee, and then, of course, in the context of people are pushing back already. People don't even want the committee to form, much less see the recommendations of the committee.
Sure. Okay, so where to begin? Ostensibly, we should, within the next couple of weeks, be hearing from Vice Mayor Alex Brown, who was the person from the city council that was chosen to be on the committee, to determine when we're going to begin. It should last anywhere between 3 and 7 weeks of weekly meetings. There are 11 people total on the committee, each coming from a different perspective in the community to provide their guidance and input. When it was initially proposed, the purpose of the committee would have been to answer the questions that are always asked and always relevant at the local level. Which commercial cannabis activities are you going to allow in the city limits? Where are you going to allow them? Are you going to put a cap or limitation on the number of any of them? And fourth and finally, are there any additional stringent oversight that you would like to place on them? Those are the four components that make up, that are mandatory for any local ordinance, any city ordinance, any county ordinance. I think that loops a little bit back into what you were saying about what is an expert in this arena for this purpose. And I think what they were looking for was someone who understands the state regs, because the state regs actually are the foundation for all of this. The state regs come into being, oh boy, I'm going to lose it here, public health, public safety, these are the things that are often brought up as arguments against allowing commercial cannabis in an area. And yet, if you look at why did the state publish over 1,000 pages of regulations and guidelines, they do it for the same reason that they do it for tomato sauce, or sunscreen, or manufacturing where you don't want to have effluent have a negative effect on the environment. Every bit of the work that the state has done has been to figure out how these businesses, all of them, should operate in order to procure and protect public safety. That's why they're there, which is why the argument is so often convoluted, where the high ground seems to be no, the high ground for safety seems to be let's not allow them. So I think they're looking for somebody who understands the state regs. I hope they're looking for somebody who's a bit of a centrist and understands that we can find a solution together where majority of people get the majority of what they want, even if everybody doesn't get everything.
Right.
That ability to come together in the middle way.
You know, I think often what we miss is that democracy ultimately means that nobody gets everything.
Right.
We all get the most important things to us, but nobody gets everything. If you got everything you wanted, we wouldn't have a democracy anymore. But Jessica McKenzie, you were talking about, you know, which activities are allowed and where, and what's the cap on numbers, and, you know, and additional oversight. All of that has to be determined. I'm wondering if you're concerned about, you know, other committee members or other members of the public that are unwilling to negotiate and just say, I don't want any activity. What's your response to that?
Well, I don't think that's in my hands. So the best thing that I can do is be an educator, help people understand what there is to understand, allow all voices at the table, try to bring about solutions, not positions, right? And then the city is going to do what the city is going to do. The population of Chico is going to do what the population of Chico wants to do, because the end result of this committee is a report that comes back to the IAC, and then a report that goes with a recommendation that goes to the council. They're going to do what they do, and they're going to vote the way that they vote, right? So that's not necessarily up to me. I will say, however, that Proposition 64, passed by a significant majority with the voting public of Chico, I believe that if this committee does not bring it forward, if the council does not bring it forward, the next thing that will happen is simply that the population will do what populations do and take civil action to make sure that it appears on the ballot in 2020.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. Jessica McKenzie, you made a comment that you said that this committee will meet regularly for the next 3 to 11 weeks, and 3 to 7 weeks. That is even more surprising. That this committee, I mean, whenever you hear government says, let's have a committee to sort this out, it means we're never going to talk about this again, and the committee gets a few years to talk about the issues, and then a report is issued, and it gets filed right in the garbage can. And so I'm actually pretty surprised that 3 to 7 weeks, this committee is going to come up with a recommendation.
The original proposal that was presented to the city council was specific in terms of the role of the committee, which is advisory. The timeline for the committee, which was 3 to 7 weeks, there was an addendum passed that said if they needed more time, they could take it, but then that they would meet weekly. And then there was a specific list of the functions that the council wanted to have represented on the committee. And there was a timeline for getting the nominations and voting done. It was very finite and fixed, which was good. It attempted to also bring the conversation back around to define the scope in that same way that I did of those four things: which businesses, where, how many, and what kind of scrutiny.
So are these meetings going to be open to the public? What kind of rules? Are they open meeting laws? Are you subject to open meeting regulations?
I would expect so. I mean, they haven't published, they haven't said when we're going to start. That hasn't been published or determined yet. I expect that to come out in the next week or two. But my expectation is that they will be open to the public, as they should be.
And so I am wondering if, you know, just to guide this process, for one, would you encourage people to come to these meetings? And also, I'm pinning you down right now, is that if this meeting is only going, this committee is only going to meet for 7 weeks, or maybe we'll give the committee a few more weeks to actually, you know, run over time and get it passed by the city council, I'm wondering if we could bring you back regularly to kind of keep listeners up to date on the progress in case you are looking for, you and the committee are looking for public input.
I would be happy to, and I don't see any reason why not.
Okay. All right. Well, that sounds great. That sounds great. So let's keep going. So a little bit of what we talked about a couple weeks ago when you were here, we talked about some of the misconceptions, some of the obstacles. What exactly is the council looking for from this committee? And then, of course, the follow-up question is, what are the obstacles?
that you see of overcoming it, or do you think this is going to be smooth sailing for the next 7 weeks?
I have never seen anything that had to do with the legitimization of cannabis be smooth sailing. I've been at this for going on 4 years now, and I'm never not surprised. So there's always hiccups and there's always bumps, particularly because it's an emotional issue. And there's a lot of misinformation and misunderstanding. It's ideologic. You know, it's always going to be difficult. From the outside, to try and answer that question without being on the council or representative of the council, the initial move was a proposal. Here is a proposal for how we could implement commercial cannabis activities in the city of Chico. It began with that. And it has never changed from that, even though there has been a lot of reaction one way or another. So my understanding is, unless there is a completely different tack that is taken, unless the council said, never mind, what the objective of this body is to come back with recommendations to the IAC, and the IAC then to come back with a recommended ordinance that reflects the best ideas, the best solutions for this unique community that is Chico.
All I can think of are best practices. So good. So you already know what I'm talking about. And one of the things that I always think of, and I rant rave all the time, I don't have anything against alcohol. I really don't. But I always just find it, the science isn't there that says that cannabis is worse than alcohol, but it's so ingrained in our culture. It's so cultural to sit around and drink. And so one of the best practices I'm always wondering about is, you know, maybe you want to have one local cannabis business for every 20 bars or something like that. What are the best practices?
Up and down the state, in communities that are of similar size to us, what often happens is one per 10,000, one per 15,000, one per 20,000 population. Now, of course, there's how many people are in the city and how many are people are in the greater metropolitan area. But it is often done that way. The numbers change, of course, when you get into big cities. But in areas like ours, I would say anywhere between 1 in 10,000 and 1 in 20,000 would be effective. That kind of leaves us in the 3 to 5 range for greater metropolitan Chico. Of course, it depends upon what population you attribute to Chico today,
right,
which is drastically different.
Right.
But there are a lot of best practices about how to make these decisions, and that's, I guess, the conversations that I hope we have. I mean, there are people's concerns about opportunistic crime. Well, there are things that one can do and that have been proven to be effective to mitigate that. There are people's concerns about youth use. We won't go into the statistics because there's statistics in both directions.
Yeah.
But there's still things that one can do to influence how effective that is. There's concern about how educated the public is. There's concern about edible products, which can be challenging since you can consume one and not suffer the effects for a long time and therefore make mistakes in how you do that. A lot of dispensaries address that by very specific educational materials and signage within their facilities saying, hey, if you're going to buy this product, you need to understand that this is how it works. So what you look for are those best practices, those solutions to the very real fears and concerns that people have. But I fundamentally believe the state has done a remarkable job of coming up with the how to protect the health and safety of the community. And therefore, it puts us back to us in terms of land use, where and how.
So, Jessica McKenzie, we're sort of in the last couple of minutes that we have. I hate saying that at the end of every hour. But Jessica, you mentioned, again, we go back to the purposes, which activities, where, how many, and what other oversight. And so I'm wondering if the committee will get down to the granular level in terms of, you know, how many are you recommending? Maybe it's one per 15,000 people or whatever. But if we say five commercial outlets, are you all going to recommend how the process is determined for awarding those license. I don't think that's going to be the purview of the committee at this point in time, but it is an absolutely essential component of the process. Once you decide that you're going to have dispensaries, and you decide how many of them you're going to have, and you decide in what zoning districts they're going to operate, then you need to put in place a methodology for accepting applications and prioritizing them and selecting from the applicants. Most often a merit-based system is the best. I would think that that would be what I as an individual would recommend to the city of Chico, as opposed to anything like a lottery or a pay-for-play or anything else. I would say a merit-based system is the most effective in getting what's best for the community.
Here's my very last question for you, I promise, because I want to bring you back next week or the following week and continue to get updates on the progress of this committee. But is there a, we always ask, who is the role model? And I'm wondering, do you know, would you identify any particular city or town that is serving as a warning of what not to do as you go through this process?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know that I do know one. From a county perspective, I would say Calaveras. But that just had to do with, I don't even know how to describe the mess that Calaveras became. It didn't have anything to do with cannabis dispensaries. No, actually, I can't. I can point you to a few that I think are great and doing a wonderful job. And that's Shasta Lake and Santa Rosa and Redding, all of which are similar size and kind of psychodemographics to Chico.
Psychodemographics? That sounds ominous.
Psychographics and demographics.
All right, Jessica McKenzie, what I want to do is, when it makes sense to you, when there really is information to report back to give us an update, you are welcome anytime forever and ever and ever, but particularly during the lifetime of this committee, and whenever it makes sense to you to give us a report back, let me know, and if I don't hear from you, I will let you know.
I appreciate it.
All right, thanks for having me. Jessica McKenzie, thank you so much. The cannabis expert for the, don't laugh, the cannabis expert for the Chico Commercial Cannabis Citizen Advisory Committee. So that brings us to the end of this edition of The Real Issue, which, of course, was made possible by listener contributions. KZFR supporters and MyBCAC.tv, Butte County's public access television station. They're broadcasting on Comcast Channel 11. BCAC.tv provides award-winning, locally produced arts, entertainment, and information programming, including daily broadcasts of Democracy Now! That is on weekdays at 11 a.m. and 5 p.m. Things are changing at Comcast Channel 11. So for more information or to get involved, visit BCAC.tv. We, of course, will be back next week. I have Audrey Denny is scheduled to be on the program with me, so join us 6 o'clock Wednesday night. This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond.